SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Early line time here on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you over the next 2 hours going through everything that has happened and everything that will happen. DRS, how we feeling here on a Thursday morning?
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo and also National Hoagie Day. I mean, this is a great day in the DRS household. So you need to have a taco and a hoagie today. Sign me up, man.
You can't wave the food in front of my face and think that I'm not going right down that path. Now, lean cuisines, here we go. Man, lean so what cuisines. Do you got to go? We're doing our best. We're doing our best. Now, you go hoagie for lunch, Donnie, and then you bang out a taco burrito option for dinner. Do you acknowledge both tremendous holidays?
I mean, I think you have to. It's maybe the best holiday there is because I am a huge fan of the hoagie and also a massive fan of the single best taco in America. It's Taco Bell. If you guys are going to a local establishment, maybe down in the barrio or whatever, forget about that. Uh-huh. Head to Taco Bell. Get the best taco on the planet. There.
I got to imagine Taco Bell's got the tiz biz, as people affectionately know. They got to have some pretty good options today. Man, a good hoagie. Man, it's just what a great day. What a great day to get after it. Man, I don't want to get lost, though. You got to imagine a man in the robes like, here this kid goes talking about food again, blaming the whole thing on me. Yep. Now, watch
not
this.
Not National
now,
Grinder Day, Kev. Not in any of that. It's Hoagie Day. Not Grind, not Hero Day, not Sub Day. It's National Hoagie Day.
I don't know what. Yeah, listen. Now I'm going to leave that one right there, man. Here we go. 7-7 top headlines. How about this one? Watch this one. Heat, too hot to handle. Woo! 119-103. To be honest with you, DRS, I'm looking through this box score here, and you're like, all right, who is the star of the game? Just all of them. They scored 119. The leading scorer was Bam Adebayo at 23. Just such a deep basketball team. It was on display in game number two.
Yeah, Hero and Oladipo off the bench, 18 points and 19 points. And oh, yeah, by the way, Duncan Robinson did play 1 minute but didn't score. So that's how deep this team actually is with how many weapons they have. So if Tyrese Maxey goes out and gets you 34 points in this game, you would figure the Sixers would be raiding it down to the wire, and it's not the case. And I told you people yesterday, the Miami Heat are much better than the Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid. Same story, game number two.
Don and I had a fun debate on the radio side about James Harden and the expectations around him. Mm-hmm. He had 16 at the break. I went, man.
Yeah.
Man, Donnie might be able to pump it. That man had 4 second-half points, man. He called it a game here. And DR's like, that's my max player, $50 million a year for high-powered Rajon Rondo. Man. Yeah, I know. Like, keep this thing. How about 29? How about 129 from the Phoenix Suns against the Dallas Mavericks? This team can't be stopped. But specifically, the second it hits the fourth quarter, like a college football team holding up the fours. Chris Paul, man, 14 in the fourth, 28 for the game, 8 dimes, 6 rebounds, just absolutely magical from CP3 in the clutch.
Yeah, CP3, 16.5 points prop, easily goes over that number. But the people out there listening, they know Kevin hates Phoenix. He hates the city of Phoenix, probably Glendale as well. Make sure you guys keep that energy up next year for the Super Bowl if KW does make an appearance in your city. But I've been telling them, Phoenix Suns, best team all year long. Phoenix Suns, once they get healthy, best team in the playoffs here. And they are, and they showed it again. 20-point victory here by the Suns over the Mavericks. Doesn't surprise me one bit. Maybe surprises Kevin, not DRS.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm the one who put them into the finals for a prediction. I have no idea what Donnie's finals prediction is, by the way. I think Donnie's going old school Royal Rumble heel announcer every new entrant. That's my pick. Nailed it. The radio audience, by the way, is here on a Thursday morning. It's Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside on the Early Line Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 159, going through the top headlines here. There's some injury updates. Ben Simmons is going to have back surgery. That is probably going to have a 3 to 4 month recovery period. And we've also got Gary Payton II, who was injured on that Dylan Brooks flagrant foul. We're talking at least a month, DRS, which is very likely going to impact the however long Dylan Brooks is going to be kept out of that series, I would think.
Yeah, it shows you how crazy the NBA playoffs are, because he breaks or basically fractures his elbow and says he's probably going to be out 4 weeks. And they go, well, he could be back for the Western Conference Finals. That's the next round. Hey, NBA, you don't have to spread these things out so long where a guy can break his arm and be back in the next round of the playoffs. But it's just the way it is.
Donnie would have every game at 3 p.m. on the East Coast. Yeah. Here. Fun action on the ice last night. Edmonton bounced back in a major way. Shout out to Connor McDavid for 2+ points, a goal and an assist. But I think one of the big stories, the Maple Leafs off to a great start versus Tampa, the defending champs, draw level on the road. They did their job there, now 1-1.
Yeah, they did. And the best thing I can say is, yeah, they were good games, Kevin.
No, don't do that, man. I mean, they just dropped us to black there with that analysis. I don't know what just happened. My goodness.
Where was the graphics up on that one?
Yeah, maybe something. Save I don't know what went wrong there. Here we go. Now, they were good games. How about these games? The Angels go extra special. Man, they absolutely popped off, which is what you love to see. Jared Walsh had a home run there. Trout had had a base hit in the extra in extra innings. And also, Madison Bumgarner was thrown out in like the first inning against the Miami Marlins. But Arizona ultimately still won the game.
Yeah, by the way, we talk about it so many times when you're taking overs. Overs are built for Major League Baseball. Once we get the baseballs back in order, you'll see this. 7 runs scored in the 10th inning alone in that Angels-Red Sox game. Long live overs. Let's just get more of them here, Kevin.
Yeah, Matt Bum also, I think it was like semi-challenged to a fight by the ump. I don't know. Some of them
were a manicure.
Some was real weird there. Celebrity boxing match maybe coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we're back here on Sports Grid. All right, let's get after it. Miami and Philly, 119 to 103. We'll start on the Miami Heat side of this. As this team wins and covers, this game ultimately soars over the number. And look, Philly got to their team total as well, so give them at least some credit for that. The Miami Heat have moved to -1,000 to win this series. They are now actually not just the top choice in the East, but they have the best odds of any team in the East to win the NBA championship. It's probably still tighter than it should be, but the price at least has kind of moved, I think, to a level with a little bit more accuracy here. Donnie, I'll let you start. What was your reaction to Miami's 16-point win in game number 2?
Same boring reaction from game 1. I mean, if Joel Embiid doesn't appear on the court for this series, it's a 4-0 sweep by Miami and the easiest sweep you could possibly get for a second-round opponent. With Joel Embiid on the court, this game gets a little bit tougher. This series gets even more difficult for the Miami Heat to win. But they're going back 2-0. There's a good chance that they would have headed back to Philadelphia, Kevin, up 2-0, whether Joel Embiid played or didn't play. But you'd like to think in game 1, if Embiid was there, the Sixers probably could have stole that one, but they didn't. So now the question is, Joel Embiid, is he going to return back to the court in game 3? So 2-0 series, we'll get to that in just a few moments. But this game itself here, it just goes to show you the depth and quality of the Miami Heat. And I have to say, like during the entire NBA season, Kevin, what were we saying to ourselves? Boy, the Heat are really disrespected here. Heat are the number one seed. Why don't we feel like they're getting the number one seed type of, you know, angles here with the prices for the Eastern Conference or the prices to win an NBA championship? And they're showing you right now, they still don't have Kyle Lowry. I mean, Butler's been fantastic out there, but everybody on this team, it feels like they contribute. If you want to play defensive basketball, they can give it to you. If you want to score 119 points and maybe get into a running game, they can give that to you. If you want a coach that calls a timeout with 16 seconds left and draws up a great play, it's Eric Spoelstra. They have everything you need. It didn't surprise me in the slightest yesterday. And me being a Sixers fan, wasn't excited for the game overall coming up. Why? Because I knew the Miami Heat were going to win this game and win it comfortably. The only thing I got wrong yesterday, Ken, between the two games was I thought this game would stay under the total because I didn't think the Sixers could get over 100 points, which they hit 103. But outside of that, the 8 points just felt like, hey, some more of the same from game 1 to game 2. And that's what happened.
One of my favorite moments during this game on the broadcast, they put a graphic side by side up of the starting backcourts and what they were bringing to the table. And you look at the final tallies. Gabe Vincent and Max Strus combined for 16 points, 4 of 10 from 3. Nothing spectacular, right? You don't go, ah, man, hey, listen, Max Strus isn't going to do that. He's going to score 9 points. Max Strus can score 9 points all game long. The starting backcourt for the 76ers scored 54 points. And the game was a complete rout because the Miami Heat are the deepest team in the NBA. Again, they scored 119. And did anybody here put up a stat sheet that blows you away? I mean, Jimmy Butler's 22-12 is strong. Bam Adebayo's 23-9 is strong. 19 off of the bench from Victor Oladipo. My goodness. Like, one of those things where now every other game, Victor Oladipo's reminding you that, oh my goodness, they have Victor Oladipo. And let's just say this. He looks closer to All-Star Depot than whatever washed variant was hanging out in Houston. That's just the truth of the matter. They have the sixth man of the year in Tyler Hero, and they just come off so much better than Philly. Like, the thing is, while, yes, the Joel Embiid absence looms incredibly large, does Joel Embiid look like the gap between these two teams? Not to me. Not to me. Embiid, like, listen, a MVP-caliber guy. Philly has been ran in both games here. And that's just the state of it. And again, we sit here. Like, they're plus 460 to win the title. They are up 2-0. They have home court throughout the Eastern Conference. And Golden State is 1-1, has to play the team that is favored in the Phoenix Suns and will not have home court if they get past Memphis. Miami is still being disrespected in this market. I truly believe that. I understand that if Miami and Golden State met, Golden State would be favored in the series. Golden State, due to a tiebreaker, owns home court advantage. I understand all of that. But the Miami Heat at this point, DRS, honestly, are the most likely team to get to the NBA Finals next to the Phoenix Suns. In fact, actually, I might argue they're the most likely team to get there over the Phoenix Suns because they don't have to play the Warriors in round number two.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because also when you take a look at the Miami Heat, rest is a big thing. As we see, there's been a lot of superstar players here, Kevin, in the NBA playoffs that have gotten injured. So if you're going to say the Miami Heat are going to sweep the Philadelphia 76ers and sit out because, quite frankly, there's a really good chance that Milwaukee and Boston goes seven games and that attrition alone is going to be tough to overcome when you essentially would have a bye week for the Miami Heat if they get this sweep or gentleman sweep in five games. But also, if we take a look a little bit down the road, the Miami Heat, sort of sitting on top of that pedestal the FanDuel Sportsbook, plus 130 to win the Eastern Conference. And rightfully so. They have a 2-0 series lead. They look like they're going to close out the Sixers and maybe the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks go a little bit longer. I think that's where it should be. But is there going to be a little bit of a discount? Because if the Heat move on to the Eastern Conference Finals, you could theoretically say they beat a one-man band in Trae Young. They said, just shut down Trae Young. The rest of that Atlanta Hawks team stinks. Then they play the Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid. Basically, they were a one-man band without their band at that point. And then you move on and say, okay, now you're going to get a really good test because if Middleton comes back for the Milwaukee Bucks, if they win that series, that's a tough one. And same thing with the Boston Celtics. They're a good team. They're not a one-man band. They have other options here that each player can get 30 points on any given night. So I do think there might be a little bit of a discount here on the Heat once you get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But rest wins. Good organizations win. They're the number one seed. We're not surprised by this. It's not like, hey, Miami Heat going on a run here. It's the fifth seed. I didn't see that coming. They're the one seed. They're supposed to do this.
Yeah, 100%. So as far as the Sixers go, all right, a lot of people took their shot to Doc. He started DeAndre Jordan again. It's not why they lost, though Doc's not really putting them in a position to win. We've gone over this. 34 from Maxey, 21 from Tobias Harris. Embiid or not, that should be a competitive basketball game. Now, George's Niang is out there getting up cardio. 10 minutes of work because he fouled out. That's not great, right? The bench, Matisse Thybul, 0-0. Doing absolutely nothing. I understand all of that. But James Harden is not a max player right now. We can go back and forth on this. But by the time this series is over, what I am saying is going to be agreed upon by, I think, everybody here. James Harden is averaging under 20 points per game in the playoffs. I'm not asking for Houston Harden. Can I get a middle ground between supercharged Rondo and a guy that was a top five player by most people literally last season? Like what, when the season ended, based on what he brought to the Brooklyn Nets, people viewed him as a top five player. I don't know if he's a top five player in the series. I don't know if he's a top three player on his own basketball team with the way things are going right now. Everything provided by James Harden in the first two games of this series has been unbelievably concerning, not just for the Sixers' chances to do anything legitimate this year, but years coming.
And you might be right. You might be right. But he still had 20-9 yesterday. So I'm going to leave that up and say, if I can get basically a 20-10 performance out of James Harden, I'll live with that in the playoffs without James Harden. Would you like him to shoot 25 times a game? Yes. Is there injury concerns on James Harden? Maybe. But if you're not reporting that to the press, we can only assume that James Harden is 100% healthy, no issues with a hamstring, back, or hand, or whatever it might be. But the Sixers just need to play better. They just need Joel Embiid. That's the missing piece here. If you come home in game three and Joel Embiid is completely healthy, the Sixers are going to beat the Heat in game three. But if Joel Embiid is one of those minutes restriction, he hasn't worked out in a week and a half, and he's just going to play out there, Sixers might be in trouble. But if the Sixers are going to win a game in this series, it's going to be game three.
Look, the thing is, we don't even know if he's going to come back for game number three. But I'm not telling you Harden had to win a game. Could you be competitive? Could you not get wildly outplayed by six guys in the series? Turns out the answer is no. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid, and the Dallas Mavericks are in a lot of trouble. This is a team that had a narrow lead at the break over the Phoenix Suns. It looked like we were in for a great game. 35-7-5 from Luka. But again, the problem is not the offense. Yes, you'd like for Jalen Brunson to play significantly better. But at the end of the day, you're out there shooting at 40% from beyond the arc. You make 20 free throws as a basketball team. You should be in the mix. The problem for the Dallas Mavericks is simple to say. It is not easy to figure out, though. And it's that they cannot guard the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix goes out there 65% from the floor, 52% from three, 30 for Devin Booker, 28 for Chris Paul. And at the end of the game, what was competitive, legitimately, going into the fourth quarter, was a 20-point rout. Donnie, what was your reaction?
My reaction is the Phoenix Suns are a really good basketball team. But the bigger reaction in this game is, what did we hear out of Jason Kidd? Hey, somebody's got to join the party with Luka Doncic. And you heard that narrative. Somebody else has to step up. And now we're hearing that Jalen Brunson all of a sudden is a super max player if he somehow gets to the free agent market. Well, in that game, too, where you needed somebody else to join the party, Jalen Brunson didn't have the cover charge to get into the party and scored 9 points. But what have we been saying about the Dallas Mavericks, Kevin, the entire season? Mm-hmm. Boy, wouldn't it be really nice if Luka Doncic had a really good player to play alongside him? It's impressive that the Dallas Mavericks won so many games in the regular season. Won that first round series with Luka Doncic basically being banged up. But now you're going up against the best team in the NBA, and you can't just show up with one superstar. You need multiple superstars to try to counterbalance and counteract the team in the Phoenix Suns. They're really good. It didn't surprise me one bit that they won and covered on their home court again. Are you going to get a big performance out of Luka Doncic in game three again? Yes, you are. But somebody else does have to join the party, but that party probably isn't happening until next year in free agency or trying to make some moves to get Luka Doncic a Batman and Robin type affair there down in Dallas.
Yeah, the thing, though, is Robin is going to have to be like three Draymond Greens. Again, Donnie, if I would have told you that Jalen Brunson, instead of scoring 9, scored 25, they still lose this basketball game. The bar for Dallas can't be, we got to score 130 a night. You're drawing dead. You're drawing completely dead. This is what Phoenix did last year in round two to Denver. Like, we were out there watching a team that had legitimately zero chance to stop Phoenix on the when Phoenix had the basketball. And that's what we're watching here again. But what's difficult is Dallas's defense was pretty darn good. Sixth in defensive rating during the regular season. They held Utah to 100 or less points in four out of the six games. I know it's Utah. Listen, that's a good sample size. It's a team that can score the basketball here. And the gap is, by the way, four out of six go 100 or less. You're now giving up 121 and 129 through two games here against this team. It's a spot where we talk, well, what can Dallas change? Hope Phoenix goes cold. That's the truth of it. Yes, again, you want better from Jalen Brunson. I understand all of that, right? You know, Spencer Dinwiddie could give you a more efficient basketball game. I understand all of that. But that's really not the problem right now. And here is the thing. Is there anything that's going to magically appear where this team can stop Chris Paul? Is there anything that's where they can stop Devin Booker? I don't think so. That doesn't seem to be coming here. Like, one thing you said yesterday was you'd rather just continue to take the over. They've posted game number three lines already. The total is 219.5. I understand that a series can have, you know, its ebbs and flows, but I can't necessarily come up with any reason to think that this game will be an under, because nothing, just, I know 52% from three is ridiculous, but does anything about what Phoenix is doing right now feel unsustainable here in this series against the Dallas Mavericks?
No, just trading punches too here. You got Devin Booker drops 30, Paul drops 28. Hey, DeAndre Ayton, take the night off. Only need 9 points out of you, and we're still going to win by 20 here. It just feels like there's so many players on that team can step up. But if you are getting elite backcourt play like Chris Paul and Devin Booker can give you, and they're both healthy, good luck beating the Phoenix Suns. That's the recipe for success. And the guy that I was sort of riding here in the playoffs going, man, you sooner or later have to step up or just be marginal out there. Jay Crowder, 3 of 5 from three-point range, finishes with 15 points. If he gives you 15 points and your backcourt is dominant as it has been, good luck there. And again, the Dallas Mavericks aren't supposed to beat the Phoenix Suns. The Dallas Mavericks weren't favored to beat the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're down 2-0 heading back to Dallas is no surprise here. But I do have to tell you, when you try to take a look at some of these lines, which we're going to do because there's no NBA games tonight, so we can only look forward, check out the Friday night numbers here. The Sixers now, it shows a money line here, minus 112. Sixers have absolutely smacked around in games 1 and 2. That's a strong price here because you're anticipating Joel Embiid possibly returning back to the court. If he doesn't, the Miami Heat is going to continue to go up. -1, -2, -3, probably -4 once they get the Joel Embiid news. But if he does play, that's different. Take a look at that Phoenix Suns-Dallas Mavericks series. Phoenix Suns have absolutely annihilated Dallas. Forget about what the final scores were. Clearly, the better team here is the Phoenix Suns. You hang a +1 Dallas Mavericks in game three here, you are just asking people to load up on the Phoenix Suns. But that's the value of home court, and that's the value of if we go down 3-0 in this series, it is over. So it's fun to see how the first two games play out, and you go, man, both of these teams have no chance to win. But then the odds book, the bookmaker, being FanDuel, says, hold on now. Both of these teams have a legitimate chance to win on their home court in game three.
Yeah, again, it's the ebbs and flows of this series. So you try not to overreact too much. Let me bring something to the table, though. You could tell me if this is an overreaction. Devin Booker scored 30 points, 5 made threes, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, a +21. It's a great game from Devin Booker. Devin Booker is a favorite to win finals MVP, and that is 100%. Just like it was last year, wrong. This is Chris Paul's team. It's always been Chris Paul's team since the moment he showed up. It's been clear every single time they are out there. Because Devin Booker can go out there and score 35. But we got to the fourth quarter, and what happens? Every single thing runs through Chris Paul. And here's now the thing that is actually going to work in Chris Paul's favor, even more than the we love Chris Paul and we'd love to give it to Chris Paul notion that people will throw out there. Devin missed time, and all that happened, despite the fact that they lost multiple games without Devin Booker, all that's happened is people went, man, what would they do without Chris Paul? Right? When we're voting for finals MVP, if the Phoenix Suns were to cut down the nets, I ultimately think they'll lose in the finals, but look, they have obviously a tremendous chance of the favorites win the whole thing. If we get there, you know what they're going to bring up when they talk about voting for finals MVP? The 14 for 14 game in round number one. the dominant performances here versus Dallas, whatever were to transpire in the Western Conference Finals. All of this is going to continue to pile up. I know Devin is at some point going to drop a 40 ball. It doesn't weigh as much as every single time we get to the fourth quarter, Chris Paul runs the entire show. The finals MVP odds right now have Devin Booker as the favorite at plus 460. Steph Curry is the second choice at 5-1. And Chris Paul tied with Jimmy Butler for third at plus 600. Simply, Chris Paul should be the favorite for finals MVP.
I mean, maybe he should be, but I guess also when you're trying to take a look at it, the MVP candidates, right? If Joel Embiid somehow gets his Sixers to the finals and they win it, he'd be the MVP because he is a freak show out there at center, which we don't get to see all that much of. Giannis Antetokounmpo, if he gets his team into the finals, he is a freak show capable of doing amazing things. Like, man, that guy dominates basketball games. It's kind of funny how Chris Paul dominates basketball games by shooting 15-foot jumpers from the elbow. People go, that's boring. Oh, but he had 28 points here. Yeah, but he didn't have any three-point shots and no explosive plays where when you see Devin Booker, right, when he drops that 40-point performance, hits 6 3-point shots and routinely just pulls up in people's face and knocks down jumpers, man, that is really impressive to go out there and watch that play. Luka Doncic, every time he takes the court, he does something spectacular. And maybe there's a downgrade on Chris Paul because he just does it so methodical. What did Chris Paul do last night? Hey, he had 24 points and 15 assists. Yeah, but that's what he always does, though. Meanwhile, 25 and 14 in a playoff game is sensational. Yesterday, 28 points, sensational. But the fact of the matter, maybe the way he does it isn't explosive. So it sort of takes your eyes to other players going, ooh, did you see that crazy dunker? Ooh, did you see those 2 3-point shots that guy hit back-to-back? That takes some of the steam out of Chris Paul's sails.
Listen, we're going to get to the fourth. Yes, when the Bucks get there, it's clearly Giannis. If the Sixers, they won't get there. Obviously, the Sixers won't be getting there. If they got there, it's obviously Joel Embiid. The Suns are interesting in that there is room for debate. You could argue there's room for Miami debate, right? Heck, people will argue there's room for Golden State debate, considering Steph has never won Finals MVP, has literally never been the best players in the. He's never been the best player in the Finals. He's been there what feels like 100 times. He's never been the best player in the Finals. So all of that is true. But when you watch the Phoenix Suns and those games come to a close, you always feel like Chris Paul is their most valuable player. It's each and every time. And at the end of the day, we can go back and forth, right, about maybe who Donnie prefers, who I prefer, who you out there prefer. Who do you think the voters prefer? Let me ask you this. During the regular season, which one of them had better odds to win regular season MVP when they were both healthy? Chris Paul. Because it's Chris Paul's team. They should be flipped. That's all. I'm not telling you Devin has zero chance. At one point, when they were in the bubble, it looked like AD was going to knock on LeBron's door. That's LeBron's team. So LeBron pulls away. This is Chris Paul's team. If they get there, Chris Paul pulls away. He would be finals MVP for the Phoenix Suns. Coming up next, we go hot or not NFL style here. This is the Early Line on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back from here on Sports Grid, hot or not time. This should be a good one. We've got some pretty good options in the NFL right now. As look, it feels far away. You're never far away from football season, especially though when the FanDuel Sportsbook provides us some new markets. And there's one that is perfect because there is one that I think Nani and I disagree on quite a bit. Season specials, regular season starting quarterback week number one for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mitchell Trubisky is minus 148. Kenny Pickett is plus 112. And then they hung Mason Rudolph for the laughs at 25-1. Hot or not, Mitchell Trubisky will be the week one starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's hot, and the FanDuel Sportsbook got this right here. Mitchell Trubisky sitting there at a minus 148 price is right. And also, if you take a look here, Kevin, at the headline, Pittsburgh Steelers starting quarterback regular season week one. It doesn't say who's going to be the starter at the end of the year. It doesn't say who's going to start more games, Mitchell Trubisky or Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph. The fact of the matter is you have a decent, let's just say decent quarterback here, Mitchell Trubisky. Overdrafted with the Chicago Bears, but actually had some success getting him into the playoffs, but it was pretty apparent that wasn't going to work out in Chicago, goes to the Buffalo Bills, learns under their system Brian Daboll, and looks like he might be able to turn his career around. And the Pittsburgh Steelers said, okay, you're probably the most talented guy we're going to grab. You are the starter. Then Kenny Pickett comes here in the draft 20th overall. We knew the Pittsburgh Steelers were looking quarterback in the draft. Even at the time that they signed Mitchell Trubisky, Kevin, they were still going to be looking for their future quarterback. Because unless Mitchell Trubisky comes out and absolutely is dominant here in 2022, which I don't think anybody expects, you're looking at Kenny Pickett as the future of your franchise. That doesn't mean you have to rush him in. That doesn't mean he has to be a week one starter and you can sort of let him learn on the fly. The Pittsburgh Steelers are an organization that's based on winning football games at all costs. When you take a look at their head coach, Mike Tomlin, he's not used to losing here, so he's not going to go through any growing pains over the first 6 to 7 weeks of the season if he feels that Kenny Pickett isn't ready to be a quarterback, but he should learn on the fly. Mitchell Trubisky will be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers opening week, and it's the right decision.
Quite honestly, I feel as if I am in outer space. What world do we live in where going with Mitchell Trubisky is how we ensure victories? Zero of them? What are we talking about here? If Trubisky is the starter, then Pickett was the wrong guy. There is no other way to describe this here. You could have very easily handed the, here, Mason Rudolph, you can start week 1, 2, and 3 before we replace you situation. They know that Trubisky's not the guy, and they certainly know Mason Rudolph is not the guy. Trubisky was a just in case they couldn't draft their man at quarterback. This is a team that knows that last year they went to the playoffs despite the quarterback play not being good enough. In fact, this team has made the playoffs 2 consecutive seasons despite the quarterback play not being good enough. So they actually can go through growing pains. But the ceiling on Pickett, much higher. You want to actually go through and make some noise in the AFC? It's with Pickett, not Trubisky. And why are we going to waste time? Here you go, Mitch. You can start week 1. Maybe they'll do the Deshaun Watson nonsense that they did to Houston all the way back when it was so bad they had to put Watson in at half of his rookie season because it was like, all right, this is a waste of time. Clearly, he's the guy. Pickett, if Mitchell Trubisky is the starter, then they should call up the Titans and be like, hey, listen, our bad. Can we get Malik Willis? We've clearly made a massive mistake. Maybe call up the Falcons and see what it would take to get Desmond Ridder here. Trubisky is... like, it is so incredible that all you have to do is be in the league for 3 years and stink to be labeled a guiding veteran hand. In what planet, Donnie, does that accurately describe Mitchell Trubisky?
It actually describes a rookie quarterback drafted 20th overall, not 1 overall, when there was questions whether or not this guy was even a first-round draft pick. That's why it is. Again, the question is not will Mitchell Trubisky have more touchdown passes yards than Kenny Pickett or throwing attempts or even games started. It's week 1. We know how the Steelers operate. Look, if Kenny Pickett is the best guy here in training camp, they're going to wind up starting Kenny Pickett. But they brought Mitchell Trubisky in to be a starter. These two guys are going to compete with each other, but one guy has been in the NFL and the other guy hasn't been there. And that's not saying that after 3 or 4 weeks, if Mitchell Trubisky stinks, which is a good chance that he might, that Kenny Pickett's going to come in, which would be fine. And that's the handoff and the maturation process of a young quarterback where maybe he's going to start in a game where they are 1-3 and everything's off. The pressure's off. If they stink the rest of the way, it's okay. But I can't find myself seeing Kenny Pickett as the opening day quarterback here on a Mike Tomlin football team. They want the veteran to go there that's been there and done that, and they'll play off of that. That's where it's going to happen. It's nothing against Kenny Pickett here. But also, if the Steelers did draft Malik Willis, I believe the same exact process would happen, where maybe these quarterbacks just might not be ready. Let's go with the veteran guy and see where it leads us here, because we want to win football games and we want to make the playoffs, and maybe a veteran guy early on, not learning on the job, is the better option than Kenny Pickett.
Trubisky is still learning because he is terrible. It's not like but he knows the playbook. No, he doesn't. He just got there. This is crazy. It's absolutely, I feel like I'm just, again, like I'm on Pluto with this breakdown here. Mm-hmm. And to say, if we have a bad season, it's okay. We start the season 2-6. It's not okay. Tomlin's never had a losing season. That's why they drafted Pickett. Otherwise, Donnie, they'd have tanked for next year's quarterback class with your beloved Tyler Van Dimes or Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud or the other seven quarterbacks that Mel Kiper said we're going to go in round number one next year. I'll bet you on the under, Mel, but we'll leave it at that. And yes, Donnie, he didn't go number one overall, but guess what? He was the first quarterback selected. He was the only one picked in round number one. So he didn't go number one overall because he didn't have to worry about a darn thing because there was nobody else pressuring him. They knew that they could sit there at 20 and take their guy, and take their guy they did. Like, you're talking about Trubisky like he's Alex Smith coming off the Kansas City seasons. He's played, been there, done that. Been there, done what? Be terrible? Do you remember the last time Mitchell Trubisky started an NFL game? It was in the playoffs against the Saints. They couldn't move the football at all. It was horrendous. How are you possibly selling your locker room that Trubisky's the guy? That's manic. It makes no sense.
But he did make the playoffs twice. And again, we're not prefacing that by saying that Kenny Pickett is not going to play football this year. But what you're saying is an NFL guy has the nod up on a rookie coming in unless they just shoehorn the rookie into that starting position, which in a Mike Tomlin team where you have to earn every bit of your starting job, I just see it as we signed Mitchell Trubisky. He was in here in the playbook. We were going to draft a quarterback regardless of what happens, but he's the perfect bridge guy. If he opens up the season 4-1, Tomlin looks like a genius. If they open up the season 1-4, and Kenny Pickett was going to be 1-4 anyway, so let the rookie learn on the job. That's the way it's going to go in Pittsburgh. Week one, when Mitchell Trubisky starts, we'll say, hey, look, DeArs was right all along here. And if Mitchell Trubisky doesn't start, the only reason why, Kevin, that's it.
No. And let me just say this right now, just because Donnie's one of these guys that every single time there's blood in the water, goes, I mean, listen, should we fire Tomlin? Let them start 1-4 because they started Trubisky. Yeah. And watch that man right there come on here and be like, listen, I just think Tomlin's lost his touch. I mean, what was he thinking? Yeah. I would have started Kenny Pickett. You know that's coming if you're a regular watcher or a listener. You know that that's how this is going to go. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy here. By the way, just a shout out for every single lie they told us that Mason Rudolph was a guy they had no problem being a guy. That is one of my favorite. Donnie's 25-1. They could hang him at a billion to one. It'd make no sense. Let me squeeze in another one that I wanted to give us a chance to talk about here. Because what we also have now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, it's a tab, rookie props. Every single one of these high-level rookie wide receivers out there, an over-under receiving total. The highest number posted is for Treylon Burks at 825.5. The second for reference is Drake London at a 750.5. Last year, Jamar Chase was not just, you know, a great rookie wide receiver. He was just one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Donnie, how about a hot or not? A, one at least rookie wide receiver will have a 1,000-yard receiving season coming up.
First inclination was a nod on this one. And then I said, hold on, let me do a little bit of research here because if you take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, nobody's really close. Nobody's lined up at 1,000 yards going, ooh, look, that looks like they could possibly do that. A lot of guys in that 725, 700, 750 range here. But if you just go back to, I don't know, 1 year ago, you had 1,015 yards out of Jalen Waddle, 1,455 out of Jamar Chase, and a tight end even went over 1,000 with Kyle Pitts. We have to remind ourselves here, this isn't the NFL of 30 years ago where there's 14 games, or even just a few years ago of 16 games. There's 17 games now in a passing league. You don't need to average 100 yards a game to get 1,000 yards. It's almost half of that for what you have to average. So for myself, and again, go back to 2020, Justin Jefferson, 1,400 yards. 2019, A.J. Brown, 1,051 yards. So over the past 3 years, 5 wide receivers have done this. There's a really good chance that somebody's going to do it. Even though when I first read the question, don't think that's going to happen here. Oh, yeah, history tells me it's going to happen.
You know, it's funny. I had the same zigzag as you. No way. And I was like, it's a lot of guys. But then I zigged again. Here's why, because I'm trying to narrow it down. So if we go just through the guys on the board, right? Christian Watson's in Green Bay. It's a tough sell for me that Rodgers, number one, is going to be a rookie. Sky Moore lands in Kansas City. He's like option 7 on the depth chart. Respectfully, can't get there, right?
Yep.
And you continue to go through the landing. You know, Drake London is in Atlanta. Well, Pitts is in front of him, one. Two, I'm not all that enthused about what Marcus Mariota is bringing to the table. Yep. Garrett Wilson's with Zach Wilson. Okay. Like, your best bet, and it's the guy with the highest option, right, is Treylon Burks at 825.5. But that still feels like a big ask for a guy in his rookie season, because the tough part for Treylon Burks, right, Jamar Chase comes in. It's T. Higgins. It's Tyler Boyd. There's so many different scenarios that they were going to be able to kind of throw out different looks there. You know, I know he only played 13 games, A.J. Brown, but he only had 869 receiving yards. Let's be clear here. Ryan Tannehill last season, 17 games played, did not throw for 4,000 yards last season because, well, they want to give the ball to Derrick Henry. And by the way, that's with Derrick Henry only playing 8 games, and he still only throw the ball for under 4,000 yards there. So actually, to me, I would say no. If you ask me who gives you the best chance of the bunch, and I had to narrow it down, though, I do think I'd go Garrett Wilson. I just feel like his workload in New York is the most secure. I know people are excited about an Eli Moore, but that feels like a scenario where if he and Zach Wilson click, he can very easily establish himself as a number one on a team that should still be trailing a bunch and can provide a lot of opportunity quickly. Don, who did you think had the best chance of that crop?
I probably would go with Drake London in that spot. Just force feed him the football through 17 games on a bad football team down in the fourth quarter. That's the way I would have went there.
It makes sense, too. He's got the, you know, tied with Burks for the best odds of any non-quarterback to win offensive rookie of the year. All right, we'll close out our number one.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid, closing out hour number one. We'll hit this quickly. It was something I wanted to pull back to the DeAndre Hopkins suspension. Question might come off odd, but if you embrace the narratives that are always important to NFL MVP conversations, I think you'll understand the premise. Donnie, does DeAndre, and I don't have to ask it in the hot or not way, I just because I think then it's going to break your brain. DeAndre Hopkins, that suspension, does it help or hurt Kyler Murray's MVP chances?
It hurts. In simple word, it hurts here. Because if you have a top-level wide receiver that can pick you up those extra touchdowns, those extra red zone touchdowns, and those extra yards, I can't see him being out helping. Because also, let's remind ourselves, the division that the Arizona Cardinals play in is very good. You need every player you need, and the MVP typically comes from the best football team, which I don't think they're going to be, specifically without DeAndre Hopkins.
It's super tough because, again, if you understand the premise, it now Kyler's bar, you can lower it a little bit. If they're winning and he's playing well, they go, look what he did without Hopkins. And then Hopkins gets to kind of crusade in. Kyler is one of the guys at 20-1. His number intrigues me a bit, but ultimately the reason I have to agree with Donnie that this is going to hurt his chances because I don't really trust Kyler's performance without DeAndre Hopkins. Forget the team results. Forget, you know, oh, they added Hollywood Brown and they drafted Trey McBride. And all. I don't trust Kyler Murray without Hopkins. It felt like it was so bad last year when they lost Hopkins that it feels foolish to be like, oh, what a great scene. The best player on this team's offense is no longer available as a safety valve for Kyler Murray. I can't just huck and pry it up and he'll be on the other end to make sure that it's going for 6 it's a tough spot for Arizona. We pause right here. Jam-packed hour number two. We start off with some NBA headlines and some injury updates here on SportsGrid.